Thank you. Maybe I should put this up a bit. Just. Yeah. I hope you can hear me. Na, ich wollte es ein bisschen höher machen. Ein bisschen
so, ja.
Okay, fast. Okay. Yeah, thank you for staying. I will try to keep it short in order for nobody to fall asleep. Before you fall asleep, maybe ask a question. Thank you for inviting me. For those of you who have not been in the seminar yesterday, I actually studied here many, many years ago, doing the very first course of Sport, Kultur und Veranstaltungsmanagement in 2001. I think, I mean, just building-wise, a lot has changed since then, because we just had one building over there. And it's very interesting for me to be back here and to see, like, I almost feel like a new generation of young people is studying here, and I would have wished for such a conference to take place while I was here, but it didn't take place. I hope I will not. I mean, there will be some parts that I already mentioned yesterday, but there should not be too much overlapping between the two talks. I'm starting with this slide, which is actually done by an artist in 2002 by Olaf Westphalen, a German artist living in Sweden, which summarizes a bit the situation we experienced with the so-called biennialization effect, or like this boom of biennials that has increased. I mean, the number of biennials has increased in the last 15-20 years from a handful of biennials up to now. I think it's around 200 biennials. They're all around the globe. The very first one was the Venice Biennial, founded in 1895. And then there was a huge wave of biennials that were founded after World War II. And the aim of many of these biennials in the very beginning was really to consolidate a certain idea of nation state and national representation, especially in the case of Venice Biennial. It offered the possibility to countries. I don't know if any one of you has ever been at the Venice Biennial, but it's built up in a way that basically different nations have a pavilion at their disposal, which actually is a territorial space of their country. So the German pavilion is actually under the law of Germany, that very building, where they decide every 2 years to show the cutting edge art projects and to represent the culture of Germany, which obviously nowadays is a bit a much more complex question than it was back in the founding years. And every 2 years, this is also kind of challenged by those who are the commissioners and those who are invited to actually curate and show artworks there. After this first wave, which like the most like historic biennials is Venice, as I mentioned, then in 1955 there was Documenta in Kassel, which was really also again about after Germany was starting to resurface after World War II, a project that would give the possibility to identify again, like what was, to have a moment of identifying firstly like German culture, but then also like internationalize it and have a cutting edge presentation of contemporary art. I would argue that now, or like since I guess the 90s, the increasing number of biennials has also a lot to do with an idea of city marketing and promotion and communication and tourism. And I found it very interesting that I'm speaking after the presentation of the European Capital of Culture, because I today realized how many kind of parallels there are and how much, in which way Manifest as a much smaller niche festival has been either the predecessor of then like cultural capital, like in the case of Donostia, of San Sebastian, where Manifesta took place in 2004, And now is in 2016, it is the cultural capital, and actually venues used there were put at, were kind of started to be refurbished during Manifesta, but I speak about this a bit later. And the other way around, like Palermo didn't get the bid for 2019, and now in 2018 there's going to be Manifesta as a sort of alternative to it, which is not maybe the for the worse. I mean, it's just a smaller scale project. So Manifesta's, the idea for Manifesta was born after the Berlin Wall fell in 1989. And it was basically there was a new configuration of Europe that was in place. And both on a conceptual as well as on a geographical level, basically the borders had to be renegotiated, and the connection between the East and the West were all in a sudden, like in a new perspective. And there was Manifesta saw the potential. Actually, it was the Dutch Cultural Ministry who saw this potential in a project to invite several countries focusing on the East, actually, to participate in this project. So the inspiration for Manifesta was actually a project called La Biennale de la Jeunesse, which is a project, a historical biennial in Paris, which does not exist anymore, which was also, again, based on this concept of national representation. So the initial idea of Manifesta was actually to give the possibility for different stakeholders and countries to present the artistic practices taking place in their countries. This was the beginning. Since then, Europe has changed a lot. and also, it was, I mean, everything kind of got more complex, and it was also not possible anymore to just look at the East-West divide got confused, or like also by the North-East divide, which is, I mean, I think burning right now, but which got also very present. So in the most evident way after 2010, like the inclusion also of the Mediterranean became a very strong element. Manifesta is a nomadic biennial, meaning that it has its headquarters in Amsterdam and a permanent team working on the daily business of the biennial and the foundation. But each 2 years, it kind of sets up a local team in the place it is hosted. And it also, in legal terms, it also founds a foundation which is functioning under the law of the country it is taking place, in order also to secure a certain independency. And it is a foundation that is composed then always of representatives of the foundation, but also then of local, I mean, of the provinces or cities that invite Manifesta. And this brings me to the process how you actually become a Manifesta host. It's similar to the European Cultural of Capital, or like as the director of Manifesta Foundation, Hedwig Feyen, also loves to say, like the Olympics. It's a bidding process in a quite like transparent way, where there's certain criteria you have to fulfill, and amongst them is also securing a certain financial means in order to be able to organize the biennial. And what is interesting, I don't know, I wanted to ask before, but what is interesting that also like this amount of money that needs to be secured in the case of Manifesta, there was always this question that if you do a biennial in south of Spain, you need a different budget than doing a biennial in Zurich, for instance. So how can you, like, which kind of key can you develop in order to make sense out of this money? And so it is bound to the GDI of the country. So it's kind of clearly related to the economic power of the city, of the region. And there's also a similar problem that you were mentioning this morning about moving to Eastern Europe, which was one of the main goals of Manifesta in the very beginning. So really moving to this to the margins of the centers and going in places where the infrastructure for contemporary art and culture is not that built up yet is a question of financial means, which makes it very difficult. And also questions of corruption. And I mean, it is really, I mean, there's been lots of discussions of going to Ukraine, of going to Georgia, of going, but then somehow very often they end when you sit at the table and try to really define terms, because there's a certain impossibility for this kind of project at this scale to be realized. And similarly to the selection of the location, also like basically after the location is selected, where there is basically a brief or a basic idea for the manifesta is included, not in such an elaborate way like the bid book for European cultural capital, but I mean the main questions and the main motivations of a place to hold manifesta are defined. A curatorial brief is defined, which tries to define what kind of project would be suitable for a specific place. And the curatorial selection, so there is no open call for curators, but the curatorial selection always is based on like a committee that invites a certain amount of curators and then invites them to make a project proposal and selects them afterwards. One of the specificities of Manifesta is that it moves out of mostly, or not always, because each manifesta is somehow different, but it very often has looked at industrial heritage and industrial archaeology for the sites it kind of used. And in most of the cases, it was really the question of making these sites, which are present in the imaginary of a place but not accessible, for instance, or belong to the past but don't have any role in the present, to make these places accessible. And this, for instance, is an image of the coal mines in Belgium, where there is which have been closed only quite recently, in the 80s, and there is a small coal mining museum inside the building, but the rest of the building has not really been used. The long-term project is to really transform them into, which is also very often happening in these transformation processes, is to transform them into a technology research center, so culture can kind of raise the symbolic capital, and this is something we can also discuss very critically, but culture is also somehow used to raise the symbolic capital of such a place before it then is kind of entering a more obvious economic circuit. And as in the case of San Sebastian, I mean, the motivation to hold Manifesta there was also very clearly to think about urban development and about the development of the city. And there's this building, which is now one of the main buildings, or a very important building for the cultural capital 2016 San Sebastian, the Tabacalera, which is also a former industrial building, which now has been completely transformed into into a cultural space, which is bringing together both the aspect of creative industries by having these fab labs and by having, infrastructure that allows design, production, and the work of, 3D printers and so forth, but then also a film institute and an arts institution and residency programs. So it's a huge container for cultural production in the broadest sense. What is one of the main tasks for Manifesta going to this places that are not so familiar with contemporary cultural production, is really the question of how can you develop an audience in these places and how can you actually mediate what you do. And one of the key pillars of the program is actually art mediation. So that's one of the parts that also I think gets many of the cities and responsible politicians to kind of decide for this project, is really this idea of trying to work to reach out to groups that are not so close to contemporary culture, and there's each time a art mediation department set up, which is always set up in dialogue between a permanent staff member who has been doing several manifesta biennials, and then a local coordinator who has the knowledge of basically of has the expertise of the local experiences and knows how to reach out to the different people. And what is important there's on the one hand side, there's this very classical program of guided tours, this transfer of knowledge in like more conventional ways. But what is always very, very important that this, there is also an experimental approach to art mediation as we know it since quite some years, I guess most prominently presented in 2012 in 2007 in the Roger Bürgel Ruth Noack Documenta, where art education became like its own kind of independent department. So also through, I mean, there's programs that try to really starting from the contents of the projects that deal, for instance, with migration, to work with the local migrant community. So the project of the art mediation actually is only, I mean, it's taking manifesta and the exhibition as a starting point, but then develops really its own logic. And through this, you then actually manage to get people's curiosity and also kind of ownership on the project. And this also relates to the idea of how can you make a place participate in such a huge project, which is through different elements. One element is definitely also the element of the volunteering program. So also having people who are interested in the project collaborate on different levels. Exactly. So coming back a bit to what Manifesta itself does next to the biennial, which is only one element. It has an archive in Amsterdam, which is the archive of the biennial, but it's also like an archive on curating and on the whole history, which is an archive that is accessible. And actually the grounding stones for this archive have been made possible through a European network program back in 2003, where there was different institutions collaborating in kind of this first wave of making materials digitally accessible. Was taking place. And then there is a publication series, a magazine, which is called Manifesta Journal, which is focusing on curatorial practices. This is also something I mentioned already yesterday briefly. And it was a possibility to reflect on the experimental approach that Manifesta took from the very beginning in working with very different curatorial constellations, experimenting, especially in the first editions, a lot with the idea of collective curating, so bringing together different group of people and asking them to do projects, something that has been abandoned a bit in the last three editions. And I guess it's also a question of institutions growing up and energies you have to put at disposal to put into processes. But so the Manifesta Journal is something which has been founded also in 2003 and was also at that time something which was not in place. So there was no discourse around curating taking place on a level of like a periodical publication, and it is now has been joined by many other publications. And then there is another project which is also running parallel to the biennial, which is also taking place though always in conjunction with the biennial, which is called the Manifesta Coffee Break, which is conferences that also take place more or less every 2 years, which are related to questions that come out of the biennial, but are also like the idea of the coffee break was like raised by a famous Swiss curator living in London called Hans-Ulrich Obrist, who said that actually the coffee break is the most productive moment, where you actually have the most intense exchange if you are at conferences. So why don't you turn the the actual coffee break into, I mean, play with this idea of how can you create an informal setting of exchange that would be more productive than just having this distant kind of division between somebody speaking and somebody listening. And then, since Manifesta moved recently to new premises in Amsterdam, there's also a new project going on, which is office exhibition. So whereas there was for a long time the problem that in Amsterdam itself, there's really just the administrative kind of structure of Manifesta, but on a local level, there is no visibility of what Manifesta was about, because it was all visible to the outside. But not, I mean, the fact that it is a Dutch organization proves the generosity of the Dutch cultural policies. But it but there was a need to find also ways to communicate with a local audience, and so yeah, there since a couple since a year or 2 years now, I think there is different exhibitions taking place in the offices of Manifesta. I will skip this one. So one of the specific elements for Manifesta, and also for many biennials, I guess, is that that the projects that are developed have developed in a very site-specific way. So meaning that curators are commissioned to develop a project that is meant for that very place, which hopefully could not be just transferred to another place, and which is also digging into questions an outsider can ask to a specific place. And in, for instance, here we see a picture of a city in Spain called Cartagena, where 2010 Manifesta took place between Murcia and Cartagena. And this is a former prison which had a very important role during Franco times. So actually making this place accessible and displaying artworks in there that kind of were questioning this specific political times was a very important issue. And all the artists are invited to come and to do site visits and develop projects and departing from there. And that also relates back to a question that we discussed before I came here, of this idea of which networks are actually opened up through a project like a biennial like Manifesta. And it's really this contact and this interest of international people coming to a place like Southern Spain, where they would not really go, I guess, on their own, is really this kind of the relationships, also in a very informal way, that start, and the way a local scene can enter in dialogue with international artists. It has always been also Manifesta's aim to pose questions that are very much related to the place, but then also relate them back to bigger questions. And I just chose this work which was shown in 2004 in Frankfurt on Porticus, an art institution there, by Mark Beil, which is called Resist, which you can read in many different on many different layers. But one was definitely what he was referring there to was also the question of urban development and how cities are shaped and developed in the 21st century. And it shows also a bit the way of practices many of the contemporary artists apply, is really that they try to activate political and social discourse without defining themselves activists, but using the artistic strategies to pose questions to a place. And then there's also always, I mean, that's at the base of the Manifesta itself, is really this macro questions that are there, just like thinking about what is Europe today. And this relates also back to the criteria that are defined for the European cultural capital, like how can you maybe also through a project like Manifesta, which initially was saying like it's kind of trying to look for the European DNA. I mean, that is something that is right now in 2016 changing every day, because also borders are changing daily right now. It's a very complex question, which manifesta, or I guess, I mean, not only manifesta, but contemporary culture and art are trying to raise continuously. So the question that remains is really like what can remain of such a project, as it is not intended to be an extraterrestrial UFO that lands on a place and then lives again. On the other hand, it doesn't have this luxurious long-term planning times like European Cultural Capital has of 5 years. So, I mean, what is crucial and what is happening now that there's conversations already for the next three editions going on is really trying to see like how this festival can interact with long-term cultural policy plans, which is something very difficult because it is very often related to unstable political structures that are just not confirmed. When in the moment there might be a politician deciding to have manifesta, but then he's not in power anymore when manifesta is actually coming. So it's a very complex dialogue that is taking place there. But nevertheless, this is one of the tasks manifesta believes also to have, also to kind of set a point, and one of the investments in the local culture is also similar to the cultural capital, is really also thinking about physical structures and infrastructure. So making accessible sites for culture that, thanks to manifesta, have been refurbished on a minimum basis, but have been made available, and also just put them into the imaginary of a place in order to, for also the inhabitants of a place to claim these sites. That's something very, very important. But this, in the year 2016, it's also impossible to finance this whole endeavor just through public money. Next to like the secured budget, which is there from the local government, and the funding, which in the arts field you get a lot. I mean, this biennial circuit has also created a culture of financing through national foundations, like you also were showing in Pro Helvetia, the Danish Arts Council, and yeah, you name it. There's almost for all, especially northern countries, there's a very advanced finance structures. But they commission just very specific artworks and artists in order not to limit, again, the access just for artists coming from these countries. There is also an attempt, and this is also a complex and delicate issue because manifesta is not moving in the commercial field. There is the attempt to set up a patrons program for each edition, basically trying to get involved collectors or private people who would be willing to sustain the production of very specific artworks, and offering them obviously also kind of a tailor-made program around that. This is also something that obviously succeeds better in places where there is a culture of collecting and private cultural financing, and this is a bit more difficult in places where this is not so established. So just to sum up where manifesta has been in the last since it has been founded, like since the first edition in 1996. I'm starting from the right bottom. So the first edition has taken place in Rotterdam, and actually afterwards they said like, well, this is a project it's not going to take place again. This is not really working. This is not what we thought. This is not the European Biennial for Contemporary Art we've been thinking about. And it was basically organized in the kitchen of the former, of the now director, like between the enthusiasm of five people, relying at that time also a lot still on kind of the support of local arts institution. And then it moved to Luxembourg in 1998, and then to Ljubljana, Slovenia, Frankfurt, San Sebastian. In 2006, there was a kind of a turning point or a crucial point, because Manifesta was meant to take place in Nicosia. And actually, the idea of the curatorial team selected at the time was thinking exactly about the brief that would, I mean, what would make sense for this specific place. It was less making an art exhibition, but filling in the gap or like steering up a discussion around art education and the infrastructure that was not in place on Cyprus. They basically turned the biennial into an art school, but the project was cancelled just a few months before the opening. Among many reasons, there was one which was that it took place both in the Greek and in the Turkish part of the city, and the local politicians did not want to have anyone having to use a passport actually to be able to pass this green line and to actually see the entire project. And then in 2008 it took place.
Political reasons and so on.
You mean why this was not anticipated?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good question. The potential of a project like Manifesta is really daring for the impossible somehow, and also kind of trying to push these borders. And in this case, it failed. But the productive part of this failure was really kind of steering up again once more the discussion. I mean, you're obviously right, but then the answer would be, okay, then we just not go there. Or what would the consequence be? And I mean, it was really kind of pushing it to the...
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. But isn't there maybe a process or control of you, of the organization, before the Manifesta? Every month or every year?
Yeah, I have to say, 2006, that was the moment where Manifesta existed for 10 years. But it is also, one imagines this Manifesta Foundation to be this huge structure of lots of people working there. It is only since 2008-09 that there's really the financing of the foundation itself is related again to getting grants from the European Union, getting grants from the Dutch Ministry of Culture. So this is always kind of moving from one edition. Right now it is much more stable, but at that time it was really moving from one edition to the next, relying on the loyalty of interns. Basically one intern who worked for Manifesta 6 in Nicosia then became the head of education and worked for Manifesta until 2 years ago. So it was, the structure itself was also very precarious, and it's not to underestimate this the challenge of finding each time in setting up a structure that still keeps this openness to be able to react to the peculiarities of a place. No, this kind of having the local needs and then relate them back to your international standards. And in that case, there was very many elements. At that time also on a league, that's after this failure, the decision to have definitely a foundation where a local foundation, where Manifesta Foundation would have the complete control, was also one of the consequences of this failure. In this field, which is also thanks to courses like this, kind of professionalizing more and more, it was also a lot of learning by doing. And then, in that sense, I don't know if that answers your question, but it could have been anticipated much more. And there's also always it can be a tension between the local expectations, also of politicians, what they expect from such a project, and what the Manifesta as a kind of an ambassadors for contemporary arts pioneers imagine in the project. And that's also a lot of negotiation taking place there.
And in this case, there was a clear power kind of structure then putting an end to it. So with Manifesto 7, it was the first time that Manifesto was not taking place just in one city, but also actually spreading over a whole region, which brought then again a new challenge, which was to collaborate between two provinces and to find a legal structure that would allow two provinces, which are like, I mean, the people themselves working in the local administration were speaking about Kain and Abel. So one being very jealous about the other, and I mean, all in a sudden bringing them together to negotiate at one table for the same project was not so easy. And the South Tyrolean part always being ready three steps ahead, with having secured already the money for venues, and in Trentino only knowing 2 months before the opening whether this location can be used and so forth. So, I mean, that was a big challenge. It was created by three curatorial teams in 4 venues. Quite a utopian complex thing for the budget then again that such a project had at disposal, which was 4 million of euros, which is not that much because it included like all the salaries, all the fees, everything. It did not include the refurbishment of venues, but still it was quite, all in all, it had 230 participant artists taking part in the projects with mostly new works. Then, as I mentioned before, after Trentino Alto Adige, there was Murcia, which actually was this biennial also trying to bring in a dialogue with Northern Africa, so trying to bring in this dimension of looking at Europe more clearly on this idea of a relationship between the Mediterranean and the North, which succeeded to a certain extent, I would say. And then there was afterwards Manifesto 9 in Belgium, in this industrial building. I mean, the main part was in this industrial building that you saw before on the picture. In 2014, there was this also quite discussed and argued anniversary biennial taking place in Russia, in St. Petersburg, where Manifesto was again for the first time after Frankfurt, after 2002, again entering the institutional spaces, so not using only like independent places, but working at the Hermitage, at the Winter Palace in St. Petersburg, which, I mean, raised a lot of questions because it took place in a historically very, very important moment of the Crimean crisis, of a lot of censorship acts taking place on like getting more public at that moment in time. And obviously Manifesto was collaborating there also with the state and the state institution. But it was the aim really for Manifesto then again to kind of to try to challenge this place from within, so to say, to place, I mean, to try to work with the structures that are there in place, and to kind of misuse such a place by also kind of trying to show very provocative art in this place. And I think, I mean, this is just a summary, I'm not going to read this out now all, but just to give you an idea of numbers and figures, like how many people are involved in get to see Manifesto. This is definitely, obviously, through this very prominent location, one of the Manifesto that got like most viewed. But there's one very important element that I forgot to mention earlier, which is the parallel events, which is something that has grown in importance a lot, and that's one of the elements that gives the possibility for people active in the place, people running programs, doing culture and arts in the place, to also kind of jump onto the Manifesto communication train and get like their program promoted that is taking place during Manifesto. It's very often really projects that are somehow developed in reaction in relation to Manifesto. Sometimes it's just really the programming of the local institutions. Very often local authorities decide to put at disposal some places where they say the parallel projects has always been more interesting than the Bayern itself. But maybe in order to give you a short break, I will just show you one film of Francis Alice, just also to show you like the way I work, I mean, like what I meant by site specific.
Francis Alice is a Belgian artist living in Mexico. If you want to watch it again, you can find it on his website. and it's just like showing like how this artist has kind of managed to link his own biographical story to the invitation of Kaspar Koenig to contribute the manifesto. And I think it has also, in this very specific kind of context, a lot of very symbolic value. But it plays with the element of humor, which kind of breaks a bit the tension. I mean, I was going to speak also about upcoming editions, but I think it's maybe also, I mean, I can also, like, I don't know how your energy is. So in June, Manifesta is taking place in Zurich, in Switzerland, and so it's going finally to the center. So it's like the the other movement around from compared to European capital. So it was smaller when it was like on the outskirts, and now it's kind of getting to the center. But also, I mean, I guess I would argue Manifesta 10 in St. Petersburg and Zurich are rather are places where there is already cultural infrastructure in place that is quite elaborated, but nevertheless it is a task of this kind of nomadic festival to find a way of entering in dialogue with the place. It is the first time that an artist has been commissioned to curate the biennial, and his name is Christian Jankowski. He's a German artist, and what he decided to do is trying to find a very witty way on how you can speak about money without going into a too political or too obvious way of the Swiss position in Europe, in the world, but trying to find an angle that would kind of relate to artistic practices, and also a question which is very relevant to the cultural production, I believe, and to the to all people involved in cultural production. And the title of this edition is called "What People Do for Money." And in a nutshell, he brought together, invited artists to enter in dialogue with different professions that are present in the city. So it is the garbage man and the dentist and somebody working in the sewage and Kläranlage and so forth. And they kind of was kind of, he left it in the beginning at least quite open on how these dialogues would develop. So there will be exhibitions in a traditional sense in institutional spaces. So it will occupy for a certain period of time some of the major institutions of the city, like the Migros Museum and the Kunsthalle Zürich. But then there will also be these satellites scattered around the city, which is actually this places the artists have been in dialogue. Next to it, there will be there was a collaboration with the Zurich University for Architecture, the department which developed a pavilion of reflection, playing with this double notion of reflection. So it will be during the night. It will be a cinema, I mean a floating cinema on the lake on the Zurich Lake. And during the day, it will be this floating architecture where you can just spend your time on. And then, since one of the motivations also for Zurich to invite Manifesta was the anniversary of Dada in 2016, obviously one could not not interact with the Cabaret Voltaire, so with one of the founding places for the Dada movement. And what he did, he developed this guild house, which is basically an artist guild that has been founded, and there's the master of the guild, which is an artist who basically the artists can apply to perform in the Cabaret Voltaire, but only members who perform can actually access the guild house. So it's also playing with this idea of access and accessibility. And this is just a picture of how the project will then scatter around the city. And it's opening on June, the preview is June 9 and 10, and then it's open to the public on June 11, and will last until mid-September. So this is Zurich, and then there will be, just to give you a flavor of like going again back to places where completely different questions are at stake. Manifesta will take place in 2018 in Palermo, where there's a whole other set of questions, both on a historical level. I mean, it's a very, very dense and important place historically, but also right now. I mean, Sicily is really on this on a pathway for the migration flows, and it also, it's like a city that is where there's still, I mean, it feels like for Manifesta there's a lot of urgencies Manifesta can tackle, and obviously it cannot do it in a way a cultural capital does it, just for like the question of money that is involved, but still the aim would really be to leave traces that can be meaningful for the city in the long run. And it is similar, I mean, the legacy or what, like the impact that Manifesta has on the different spots is very different from, I mean, it depends really on what was basically the needs for a place for it to come. In the case of Trentino Alto Adige, we're definitely, I mean, that's already quite a developed and quite touristical region, as we were speaking before over lunch. Still, one of the biggest motivations was to finally also present the territory not just as a place for leisure and food and landscape and this nice mix between the Knödel and the Mediterranean flora, but also like really place it on the map for cultural tourism. And it never works just through a festival, because obviously that was at the same time where
Museum, the Museum for Contemporary Art opened in a new building with like quite spectacular program. So there's very many elements. A manifesto can always display, can be one, but it needs, as I was saying before, it needs to be part of a bigger policy plan. But I will stop it here, I guess. Maybe there you have still energies for questions. Otherwise, great. Wow. Very good. Sophie, sit down. Thank you.